Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ask the Employment Specialist telephone Q&A session. Your host, Ms. Barbara McKeon, will now begin.
Thank you, Stacy. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our Ask the Employment Specialist call. As mentioned, my name is Barbara McKeon, and I'm the Director of Employment Services for the New York City Southern New York Chapter of the National MS Society. And also joining me on the call today is Steve Nissen, who is the Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C. This is the second of four calls for this fiscal year that we'll be doing across all chapters in the Northeast region. And also joining us on this call are some members of the National Capital Chapter. The calls are designed to respond to employment concerns or questions that you all may have. But as there's limited amount of time, our responses to your questions may be brief. You all had excellent questions, and I'll try to do my best to answer them. If there's time, I will open up the call for follow-up questions. However, if we run out of time throughout the call, Steve and I will provide you with our email addresses. So if you have a follow-up question or if I did not fully answer your question, please let us know, and we'll be happy to provide you with additional information. I may also be referring you to websites or resources throughout the call, so you may want to have a paper and pen handy to write the information down. A lot of our resources are available to you on our websites, and so we may be able to give you additional information. So please have a paper and pen handy. Again, as I said, you can email either Steve or myself, and we can always follow up with you. And just one more thing, there's a brief survey at the end of this call that we would appreciate it if you would participate in. It will only take a few minutes and will help with our calls going forward. And I hope our moderator, the operator did get that survey. And
yes, ma'am.
So now... You did? Okay. I wanted to be sure of that. Thank you. Okay. So let's start with two questions we received regarding a very common topic, disclosure. And the two questions are, if an employer is considering me for a job, shall I be upfront and tell him or her that I have MS? And the second one is, what do I disclose about my MS if it's undetectable at first meeting during a job interview? Would saying I was disabled help me in the job search at all? Generally, you do not need to disclose during the interview process, except under certain circumstances. And the times when you may need to disclose would be after a job offer is made, but before you start working. During this period of time, an employer can legally ask any disability-related question and conduct medical examination as long as they do this for everyone in the same job category. So if you are asked a question during this period, before you start to work and after an offer is made, you must answer honestly if asked about any medical condition. If the job offer was then to be withdrawn, the employer would need to have a good business reason as to why, and it must relate to the position you've applied for. So, for example, if you had a seizure disorder and were applying for a position as a bus driver, they might have the right to pull the offer for safety reasons. But again, they have to have a good business reason as to why they would pull the job at that point. Another time you may need to disclose is when you're requesting an accommodation in order to be able to perform the duties of the position. So if indeed you were interviewing for a position, you knew you could do the job, but you were going to need, say, some special equipment because you have visual problems, or you're going to need a special chair, or you're going to need a parking space close to, or desk close to the bathroom, or parking space close to the office, those kinds of things, which would be considered reasonable, would be something that you would need to ask as part of a reasonable accommodation, that would be a reason to disclose during the interview process. But even there, I would caution you against doing it before the offer is made, because if you do it before the offer is made and you don't get the position, there's really no way to to know whether you didn't get the job because of that or or because you weren't the most qualified. So, you know, if you have a need to disclose for accommodation reasons, I would suggest waiting until after an offer is made. You would probably need to provide medical documentation as to the reason for your request. It's possible your diagnosis will be disclosed at that time. Your doctor could write down that you're being treated for a medical condition which causes, say, for example, extreme fatigue or whatever the issue is. But if the employer is not convinced that you have a disability covered under the ADA, they do have the right to ask for additional information. So it's possible that your full disclosure could occur. Any information they do obtain is to be kept in a separate file from your personnel file, so just be aware of that. Also, many people feel they want their employer to know for a variety of reasons. One thing to consider is if you don't need to tell and yet you feel you want your employer to know, it may be advisable to wait until you've worked for a while and have shown the kind of worker you are and that your medical condition will not interfere with your ability to do your job. Regarding disability disclosure as a benefit to your job search, in general, I would say no, it's not an advantage, unless your medical condition for some reason would be considered a qualification for the position you're applying for. So, for example, say you are applying for a job as a drug sales rep selling a drug that you're taking, say Copaxone or Avonex. And this by no means would guarantee the employer would see it as an advantage, but here's a situation where it might possibly be an advantage and might be some reason to consider disclosing. Another time would be if you're applying for a position within the government. Local government agencies often hire people with disabilities under special programs. So, for example, in New York City and New York State, we have something called 55A and 55B programs. And it's possible other states and cities have their own programs for hiring people with disabilities. But one that all of you should be familiar with is the federal program of Schedule A, which leads to the next question. Someone has asked the question, if you want to use Schedule A, should you tell the interviewer that you have MS? If you need proof that you have the ability to work, how do you get that proof? And when must you show that to your prospective employer? Now, Schedule A is an accepted service hiring authority available to federal agencies to hire and or promote individuals with disability without competing for the job. So that you don't have to take a test, you don't have to compete with other people who do not have a disability. You're eligible for Schedule A if you are a person with a severe physical or mental disability and meet the qualifications of the job in question. There are no specific definitions as to what qualifies as a severe mental or physical disability under Schedule A, so federal agencies are free to interpret the requirements broadly. So this may be one situation where disclosing your disability before the interview could be beneficial. If you're planning to gain federal employment under Schedule A, you'll need to submit a Schedule A letter when you apply. Therefore, any of the federal government employers you interview with will already know and understand you have a disability. Whether or not you want your Schedule A letter to include your diagnosis of MS is entirely up to you. You might want to explore your reasons for wanting or not wanting to tell your employer you have MS. Generally speaking, a Schedule A letter does not disclose specific diagnosis, as I said, but it does certify that you have a documented disability, so whoever writes your letter would need some medical documentation from your doctor. It also serves as certification that you are job ready and likely to succeed in a work environment. You can have this letter written by any one of the following professionals: your doctor, a licensed medical professional, a licensed rehabilitation professional, such as Steve or myself, any federal, state, District of Columbia, U.S. territory agency that issues or provides disability benefits. Usually, a person might obtain a Schedule A letter from their state VR office, the Departments of Veteran Affairs, or their doctor. Many times, doctors don't know what a Schedule A letter should include, but know there are examples out there on the internet especially some government agency websites, so you can share those with your doctor. The VR and the VA would usually use a pretty standard form letter. So to learn more about all of this, you can visit the EEOC website, which is EEOC.gov, and also the Office of OPM.gov/disability, which is information on the federal government Schedule A. And there's a good brochure out there called the ABCs of Schedule A through the EEOC website, which should help you with more information on how to apply for a federal job. If you also have want more information on this, excuse me, you can email Steve or myself. We'll give you our contact information at the end of the call, and we can send you a link to a guide to a federal program that we did several years ago, so you can listen to the program, and we also have links to materials that will assist with applying for a federal position. The next question we have has to do, well, the next two questions have to do with working at home and telecommuting. The first one is, how can I create a situation where I have flexible hours and work at home part-time? Question two, flexible is really more wanting topics on flexible and remote work opportunities, telework and telecommuting, self-employment training options, online and in-person for individuals with disabilities. So they were more topic headings instead of an exact question. So if you're not currently working and are considering working from home with flex hours, please email me after this call and I'll send you work from home resources you can explore, as there are many work from home jobs that are flexible and part-time. If you are currently on Social Security, I would highly recommend you listening to the teleconference that will be happening in 2 weeks from tonight, on February 27th, on work from home options for those on Social Security. The deadline for registration is next Wednesday, so there's still time to register. And if you go on your current chapter's website, there should be information on how to apply for that, or how to register for that program. However, if you're currently working, then perhaps you're thinking about asking for an accommodation. If you think you might need an accommodation, you will have to request one. You'll need to let your employer know that you need an adjustment or change because of your disability, which means you'll have to disclose your disability to your employer if you haven't already. It's best to have a conversation with your employer about what you may need, as well as a written agreement that can be referred to if needed. Flexible hours and work from home are accommodations that may be very reasonable in one work environment and quite unreasonable in another. So depending on what you do for a living, your employer may or may not be able to accommodate you in these ways. Think about if and how you would be able to perform the essential functions of your job if given these types of accommodations. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, does have a useful fact sheet on telework as a reasonable accommodation. That can be found online at www.eeoc.gov/facts/telework.html. Again, you can email me and I'll be happy to send that link to you. What we have seen is that many times if employers are willing to consider telework or telecommuting, it might start off on a trial basis for a set amount of time, and usually it's not 100% of the time, maybe working from home 1 or 2 days a week or a few hours per week. Regarding the second question, which is more of a list of requested resources than a question, again, please email me at the end of this call and I can forward you our web section for home-based employment and self-employment, as there are a huge number of resources to assist you, including an online training for people with disabilities for self-employment. Also, you can check out our past employment programs, as we have done a few on those topics as well. The next question is, how do I go about getting myself set up as a consultant? Where can I go for training? How would I go about building a portfolio to gain clients? So here again, this question deals with self-employment. And it's important to get informed about the different types of self-employment options out there. One might be as a consultant. One great resource is the Job Accommodation Network, or JAN. They have a self-employment and entrepreneurship service on their website. Their website, askjan.org, is a site that you may want to check out. Or you can contact them by phone at 1-800-526-7234. The staff at JAN can provide a lot of very useful information and referrals for self-employment resources. They can explain the different types of self-employment options, share potential funding resources with you, and try connecting you to those resources that could provide use to prove to be useful to you. For training, some state BR agencies can provide assistance with training and starting your own business. In addition, www.start-up-usa.biz. I'll repeat that, www.start-up-usa.biz can be a helpful resource. That stands for Self-Employment Technical Assistance Resources and Training, and there's a wealth of information on their website on business startup. Also, as I mentioned to the previous caller, if you email me, I can send you additional resources that may help you with this process. The next question is, if your company has a layoff, can you still submit for disability at that time if you're affected by the layoff and not lose the disability benefits you have obtained from many years of employment at that company? The truth of the matter is that once you're laid off, you're typically no longer eligible for any of your benefits. So if you sense an impending layoff, it may be prudent to act proactively and start the process before you're let go. Once you receive the official notification, it may be too late. It may be possible for you to get disability. Let's just say you've been having difficulty on your job due to your MS for a while, and this has been noticed, and you either had to request an accommodation or special circumstances in order to do your job, and that doesn't seem to be helping. In other words, there's been a history of difficulty on the job and decline prior to a layoff announcement. It would need to be clear that you're applying for disability because you can no longer work in your current position, not because you're being laid off. I do understand that when you have good benefits and you have a good benefit package, that it may be of concern, but in order to qualify, you will have to demonstrate you're unable to work, and so there needs to be some proof that both from your doctor and from your workplace. If you were doing your job without any difficulty up until the layoff, then it's possible that you will have a difficult time with this. The next question is, what are the biggest obstacles to people with MS getting or keeping jobs? Obstacles to keeping a job can be many. MS symptoms that cannot be managed or accommodated, which interfere with work performance. Lack of understanding or flexibility from an employer, regardless of the laws, which could include discrimination. Obstacles to getting a job for people with MS as different from others, I would guess, have to do with possible gaps in someone's resume due to MS, although gaps are less of an issue these days with so many people out of work. You still need to be able to talk about those gaps in an interview. Other obstacles can be employer attitudes toward hiring someone with a a disability, particularly if the disability is noticeable. Although things have improved in this area over the years, we are in a climate where it's an employer's market, so someone with a visible disability may have to work a little bit harder to sell themselves and what they have to offer an employer than someone else. It's not a nice thing for me to have to say, but it's reality. Lack of confidence is another issue that I see many people with MS, for lack of a better phrase, suffer from. It's hard enough being without a job, but having MS as well causes some people to allow doubt in their ability to do the job creep in when they're interviewing, and that's a kiss of death on an interview. I have heard people tell me that they worry, will I be able to do this new job? Will I be able to physically handle the hours or the demands? Will this new employer understand about my MS if I do have to tell them about it? There's all these doubts that start creeping in, and you can't be thinking about that when you're on a job interview, because you have to go in there putting your best foot forward and believing that you can do the job and showing them what a good employee you can be. So you can't allow those things to creep in, even though they're there, and I do understand that. But that can be a real obstacle for you if indeed you start feeling that way and you're not putting your best foot forward. As now more than ever, one needs to project a great deal of confidence to knock out the competition. So allowing those thoughts to creep in could sabotage an interview. Those are the major obstacles I can see. I'm sure there are others, but for the moment, those are the ones that come to mind. The next question, how can I request a job accommodation from my employer? This is a question we get a lot. You need to let your employer know that you need an adjustment or change because of your disability to your job, the way you do your job. You're not required to complete any special forms or use technical language to do this. However, it's often advisable to put your request in writing simply to protect yourself. If an accommodation is in writing, it makes it much more difficult for new management to take away an accommodation. It's also best to make the request to the HR department, since often managers are not aware of the laws and may not follow the appropriate procedures or even understand what's allowed or what's not allowed. It's important to know that you have the bulk of the responsibility during this process. Your employer does not need to be proactive, and it's up to you to bring solutions to the table. So do your homework, determine what accommodations would be most beneficial to you, speak with your doctor, call the Job Accommodation Network, JAN, that we talked about earlier, or check out their website. Think about things you've already done in your life and or at work that have proven helpful in managing your symptoms. It's your responsibility to talk about this with your employer, and it goes hand in hand with disclosure. The Job Accommodation Network has a great letter you can use as a sample. So again, go on their website and you can find that letter, or else you can contact me and I'm happy to send you the link to the letter. And again, you can contact me. At the end of this call, we have additional resources we can email you in outlining the process and also sample videos of a disclosure script. The next question is, I'm unable to do the job I had before I had my MS symptoms that I have now. How do I figure out what I should do now? Well, if you're currently working, and depending on what your symptoms are, you may be able to request accommodations from your employer that will help you to do your job effectively, as mentioned before. If you don't feel that an accommodation is the answer, it may be a time to think about switching careers. A VR counselor may be able to help you figure out what you would like to do based on your transferable skills that you have from your previous work history. And if you're going back to work after being out for some time, contacting your local Office of Vocational Rehabilitation, each state has their own Office of VR, can be of great assistance. They assist eligible individuals with disabilities to obtain suitable employment by providing rehab services, which could include evaluations, training, assistive technology, and job placement. Your local MS Society chapter office can connect you up with your local VR office. I know in Steve's chapter and my chapter, we have liaisons that we can help connect you up with. But those of you who are not with the National Capital Chapter or in the New York City area, you can check with your local chapter office. Someone there should have information on your local VR office, and you could get connected with them. Your local VR office, where appropriate, can do an evaluation to see how your current skills are. And how your MS symptoms are having an impact or not having an impact on them. Are your skills competitive, meaning do you have the speed or the skills to work in the field that you're interested in or worked in before? For someone who hasn't worked in a while, they would most likely do a work evaluation to determine the best job for you, keeping in mind your MS symptoms, as well as your skills and interest. Part of this evaluation may be a situational assessment, meaning they may have you do an internship to see how you manage working 5 days a week and how your symptoms would affect you on a daily basis. Perhaps the recommendation at the end would be for you to work in a position where there are less hours or for you to get training in something that's less physically demanding. If so, they could assist you with placement and training if needed. The next question. I'm looking for an entry-level part-time position but don't know where to begin my search. How can I also say that I can only work part-time without disclosing I have MS? I can send you a link to a guide to an effective job search. So if you email me at the end of this call, I'm happy to send you that link. But my suggested first step for you is to contact your local VR office, which we just talked about a moment ago, and have them work with you on finding part-time work. If you apply for a part-time job, then there's no reason to discuss your MS with anyone. Your decision to work part-time is your business, and there'd be no reason for you to have to explain this. You could have many reasons why you choose or need to work part-time, including childcare, a family member who needs care, return to school, many reasons. But if the job you're applying for is part-time, then there should be no question or no issue. But again, your local VR office can help you with finding a part-time position. So I would suggest you starting out with a call to them. They can be a good resource for you. The next question has to do with insurance. I clearly need my benefits now more than ever. How can I ensure my care if I ever decide to stop working in a full-time position? This is an excellent question and one that does get asked a lot. As a matter of fact, it's the topic of one of our teleconferences that will be coming up on March 13th, the impact of health insurance on career decisions. So I would suggest, if you haven't already, that you register for it, as you may gain some additional insight into this topic. Many people who stop working start off on Social Security and then start working part-time to supplement their Social Security. This allows them to get on Medicare after 2 years. But since there is a wait for insurance, you would need to purchase COBRA when you leave your job for the 2 years you would be without insurance. COBRA allows you to continue your employer's insurance at your own cost. You're generally allowed 18 months of COBRA, but if you're approved for Social Security and you notify your employer within 60 days of getting your Social Security approval, you can get approved for an additional 11 months of COBRA to cover you until your Medicare kicks in. So the 11 months and the 18 months gives you 29 months, which is generally 2 years of a waiting period for Medicare, but it's a 5-month waiting period to get on Social Security. So there's 29 months in general that you have to wait. So the 18 months of COBRA plus the additional 11 months covers those 29 months. By the way, in New York State, for those of you in New York State, you automatically get 36 months of COBRA due to a specific state law that we have. So you don't have to worry about that extra 11 months. However, COBRA can be very expensive. So some individuals find that they're unable to afford it and they need to look at alternatives. Alternative medical insurance can be different depending on where you live. In New York, for example, we have something called Healthy New York, which is generally cheaper than COBRA. It's about $385 a month, but it doesn't really pay for your medication beyond $3,000 a year, which for someone on MS meds is a drop in the bucket. There are patient assistance programs for a lot of the MS medications. Sometimes they can help. They can help out, particularly if you're waiting. Say, for example, you're waiting for Medicare to kick in. You may need to take Healthy New York if you can't afford the COBRA and talk to the patient assistance program, and they may be able to get you your medication. So that can cover you for a couple of years until you can get the Medicare. But if you're doing well now and you're working, and you know this is something you're concerned about for the future, my recommendation is to the extent that you can, and I know it's not always the easiest thing to do, but to try to put away some money. Put some money aside to help pay for that COBRA should you need to go on it one day. Another option is if you're going to work part-time or you're thinking about you're going to need to work part-time, look for a part-time job that gives benefits. They are out there. There are part-time jobs that do provide benefits. Ones I'm most familiar with are ones in the retail area. I know Barnes & Noble provides benefits to part-timers. There are banks who hire part-time tellers, since that's a common, it's common for tellers to be hired part-time that do provide benefits as well, just to name a few. So that may be another option for you as well. But if you're not in New York State and you need to look at alternative insurances again, you may want to talk to your local chapter who might have information on more local state health insurance policies that may be cheaper for you than going on COBRA. The next question has to do with Social Security and return to work. Currently, I'm receiving Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, and would like to know how much I can work and still receive my benefits. You're allowed 9 months to try out a job to see if you're ready to go back to work. This is called a trial work period. For any month you earn over $750, this just changed, by the way, January 1, you'll use one of your trial work months. You'll still collect your social
Barbara,
go ahead, Steve.
Just to clarify, it's now $1040 a month. As opposed
no,
to
the trial work.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Trial
I'm
work.
Sorry. I jumped
that's
ahead.
Okay.
I apologize.
That's okay. That's fine. I was getting to that. the $750 has to do with your trial work period. So for any month that you earn over $750, you'll use one of your trial work months. It used to be $720. Now it's $750.
That's right. I apologize. I thought that you were already talking about the substantial gainful activity.
that's okay.
Sorry
it's always
that.
Good to get clarification. You'll still collect your Social Security checks during that time, and you don't have to use all the months at once. You can start, and if you find you can't work after 3 months, you can stop and then try again another time. But now you'd only have, say, 6 months left. The 9 months are within a 60-month time frame, a 5-year period. So you'll have 9 months of trial work. Once you've finally used up all your 9 months, Social Security will look at your earnings, and then at that point, like Steve said, if you're earning 1,040 or more a month, and it used to be 1,010. It's gone up to 1,040 or more. At that time, you would be considered gainfully employed or substantially gainfully employed. We call that SGA, substantial gainful activity. You may hear that term with Social Security when they talk about the SGA. They're talking about that 1,040 or more a month. If you're legally blind, that amount is actually 1,740 a month, quite a bit more. You would have three more months after they would say you're gainfully employed. After 9 months, they say you're gainfully employed, you'd have three more months. You would continue to get your checks, and then your checks would stop. If you're working and do not make over the 1040 or 1740 if you are legally blind, then you can continue to collect your SSDI. Once your benefits stop, you enter a period of extended eligibility, which is 3 years, for 3 years after your benefits stop. If at any time during those 3 years you're not able to continue working, you just notify Social Security and you'll immediately go back on your benefits. There's no need to reapply. And I know that's a comfort for some people to say, I went through this long application process. It was really hard to get my benefits. I'm really afraid to try to work. That's why these work incentives, we call these work incentives, that's why they're out there, because Social Security wants you to try. And they don't want you to be afraid. They want you to give it a shot, and want you to know that there is that cushion, there is that safety net should things not work out. So you actually, if you think about it, you have 4 years before you really now have to, think a little bit more about your benefits, because you have your trial work period of 9 months. You've got another 3 months after that before your checks would stop. Then you've got the 3 years of extended eligibility, which you could go right back on your benefits should you stop working. And then even after that, you have another 5 years where if you couldn't work, you'd immediately start getting your benefits again. But during that five-year period, if Social Security would redetermine if you're still considered disabled. So if, your benefits would continue if you're considered disabled, but if not, at that time, your benefits would stop. You would not have to pay back any benefits you were collecting during this time that they were redetermining if you were still disabled. But, but that would be, again, now we're talking about 5 or more years after you would have started working, that would become an issue. It's important to determine the impact that work might have on your benefits, and there are professionals out there in the community and programs designed to help you understand the work incentives available from Social Security. There is a helpful website called www.choosework.net. www.choosework.net. This is a website about the Ticket to Work program, and listed are upcoming events. They're called WISE events, Work Incentive Seminar events. In some communities, there are also Community Work Incentive Coordinators, or CWICs, who can perform individual analysis of your benefits to help you understand the impact work might have on your benefits. I thought that they, I know that some of the CWICs here are no longer. I don't know if
some
are funding
some,
for them.
Some here have been able to secure funding from sources other than Social Security Administration, so it's definitely still worth looking into. Where the CWICs have gone away, the WISE seminars, those Work Incentive Seminar events, have kind of replaced that same service. But for instance, here in Northern Virginia, there are still funded CWICs. In Maryland, it's a fee-for-service that oftentimes the state VR can pay. So there are still the resources out there.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Someone else had indicated they wanted information on how to apply for Social Security. So to apply for Social Security disability, which is the government's long-term disability, call the Social Security office near you. Tell them you need to file a Social Security disability claim, and an appointment will be set up to conduct an interview in person or over the phone, whichever is more convenient. Here's their number. It's 1-800-772-1213. The claims representative assigned to your case will provide answers to all your questions and will handle the paperwork needed to send your claim to the Disability Determination Services, where the medical decision on the case will be made. And determinations regarding program eligibility are generally based on a person's work history. More and more, Social Security Administration is encouraging people to apply online by going to www.socialsecurity.gov and click on the tab that says Disability. You should then see the button to apply for disability. No, you don't have to do it all in one step. You can start the application and return to complete it at a future time. And if you didn't get any of this information, again, you can email us. I'm going to give you our contact information in a few minutes. And according to Social Security, a person is entitled to receive Social Security disability benefits when they're no longer able to perform SGA or substantial gainful activity. Remember I just talked about the 1040? That was a substantial gainful activity amount. So if you're no longer able to perform work that will pay you $1,040 a month or more, then according to Social Security, you'd be entitled to receive Social Security benefits. And it'd have to be as a result of a physical or mental impairment that's expected to last 12 months or possibly result in death. Specific criteria for disability approvals are included in the Social Security listing of impairments, so it's important to note that your doctor should be familiar with these criteria when submitting statements on your behalf. Therefore, it's important for you to explain to your doctor just how your MS limits your daily activities and keep him or her informed if symptoms progress, because they're going to need to be writing this information based on your medical records. So if you haven't been telling them all the things that are a problem for you and you've been holding back, then that's going to hurt your claim. They need to know, you know, has your condition been declining? How are your symptoms impacting you on a day-to-day basis? It's not uncommon for a claim for Social Security to be denied. In fact, it's the norm, and appeals are generally required for disability benefits to be established. Many claims, however, are denied because a person's medical record lacks adequate documentation that fully establishes the severity of the disability. So again, very important for Social Security to get that information. All information regarding continued medical treatment, all of that needs to be reported to Social Security. If the application's denied, do not reapply. This is a common mistake made by applicants for disability benefits. You should never reapply because new applications will simply be denied again. Instead, you file an appeal, or better yet, seek the services of a qualified disability representative who can guide your case through the disability appeals process. For short-term and long-term disability, if you have a private policy through your job, get a copy of your policy either through your HR department or go directly to the company to find out their procedures, as each policy is different. If you're applying for state short-term disability, which we do have in New York, but most other states do not have, you would talk with your HR rep, and they should tell you how to apply. Often it's your job that administers state short-term disability benefits. It provides you with up to 26 weeks of income, maximum of $170 per week. So that, again, is only for New York State residents. There are four other states that do have these benefits. I don't think they're on the East Coast. I'm not sure which ones they are. I think one of them is Hawaii. But you could find that out online. And our final question, I was let go from my job after 33 years and need help with my resume. You know, this is a tough question to kind of, it's actually not a question, but more of a service request. So I really can't respond to it, something I'd need to more see to comment on. But if you, again, I'm going to give you my email address. Please email me. I'm going to email you some resources for resume writing, which should help guide you, as this is, you know, something you're going to need to work on. I'm also going to send you links on home-based employment, since you also mentioned that that was something you were looking to do. And again, I go back to connecting up with your local Office of Voc Rehab. I believe you are in Rhode Island, the person that asked this question. So you'd need to check with your Rhode Island Office for Vocational Rehabilitation. They can help you with your resume. They can help you with looking for a job. Home-based employment, I'm not sure, but it definitely you should speak to them and see what services they have to help you with finding a new job. That is their function. So hopefully they can provide you with additional assistance as well. But I have a lot of resources on our website for all different topic areas. Again, here is my contact information. You can email me at B as in Barbara, McKeon, McKeon. So that's McKeon at msnyc.org. And my phone number is 212-453-3218. And Steve, do you want to pass out your information as well?
Will do. I can be reached via email at steve.nissen. It's N as in Nancy, I S as in Sam, S as in Sam, E-N, at nmss.org. Phone number is 202-296-5363. And again, I'm with the National Capital Chapter, so for those of you who are on the call who live in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. Region, feel free to get in touch with me.
Great. Thank you, Steve. So we really only have about a few minutes left, so I don't think we have time for follow-up questions because we still need to do the survey. But again, please, you can email either one of us with follow-up questions, and we're happy to continue to work with you, continue to provide you with information and support and additional resources. So, Steve, do you have anything further that you want to add before I pass this on to Stacy?
No, I just wanted to thank you and thank the Northeast region for allowing us to be a part of today's call. So we really, really do appreciate it.
Our pleasure. All right. Please stay on the call for just a few quick questions that we would like you to respond to, and we hope to hear from you soon. Stacy?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our polling session. Please respond to the following questions. How old are you? Press 1 for 20 to 30, 2 for 30 to 40, 3, 40 to 50, 4, 50 to 65. For our next question, what chapter are you from? Press 1 for Greater New England Chapter. Press 2 for NYC Southern New York. 3 for the Connecticut Chapter. 4 for Upstate New York. 5 for Long Island. 6 for New Jersey. And 7 for Rhode Island. Again, what chapter are you from? Number 1, Greater New England. Number 2, NYC, Southern New York. 3, Connecticut. 4, Upstate New York. 5, Long Island. 6, New Jersey. And 7, Rhode Island. For our next question, I felt my question was sufficiently answered. 1, strongly agree. 2, agree. 3, agree somewhat. And 4, disagree. For our next question, if my question was not sufficiently answered and I have follow-up questions, but I am satisfied that I can follow up with the speaker, press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 agree somewhat, 4 disagree. Again, if my question was not sufficiently answered and I have follow-up questions, but I am satisfied that I can follow up with the speaker. 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 agree somewhat, and 4 disagree. For our next question, I learned something new. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 for agree somewhat, 4 disagree. Again, for our final question, I felt the call was useful. Press 1 for strongly agree, 2 for agree, 3 agree somewhat, and 4 disagree. Ladies and gentlemen, this now concludes our polling session. Ms. McKeon, did you have any final thoughts? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you have a great day. You may all disconnect.